Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is unlearning helplessness, and the numbers to call to talk about having what you want in any area of your life are 1-866-254-1579. That's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4300. You can listen to the show while you're on hold if you're waiting to get on. Before we do that, a couple of housekeeping things. I've been promoting on the station a training in London called Coaching Mastery, and I found out to my embarrassment that it's been sold out for the last 3 weeks, and somehow I just didn't find out about it, so you can't attend that training anymore. However, if you're going to be in the UK and you want to come see me, I'll be doing a couple of other live events, an evening event at Alternatives in London on the 22nd, and Hay House is actually putting on a one-day effortless success training on the 27th. So if you want more information about how to book to come see me on either of those days, you can find that at my website at www.geniuscatalyst.com. And I want to talk a little bit before we go to the phones about this idea of learned helplessness. I've talked about it on the show before, and I've shared some of the experiments that originally led to the development of this theory of learned helplessness, which is the idea that there's nothing that we can do, so we may as well not do anything. Now, when I talk about these experiments, inevitably some people get very upset because these experiments were done on animals. They were done about 60 years ago, back when people hadn't really thought through the implications of doing experiments on animals. They've been done. To me, it's worth learning from them. So one of the two experiments that I tend to go back to that really led to the development of this learned helplessness theory were an experiment where they took rats and they put them in cages where there were four squares. So the cage floor was divided into four. And what they did is they put a small electric charge underneath each of the four squares so that they could create an electric charge in any of the four quadrants of the cage. And what they did is they would electrify one of the quadrants, and what they found is very quickly the rat would learn to stay in the other three quadrants. In other words, the rat would learn, okay, if I step here, I'm going to experience pain, so I'm not going to step here anymore. I'm going to stay here where it's safe. But then what they would do is they would electrify a second quadrant. So now only half of the cage was uncharged space, and the other half they would get an electric shock if they stepped on. And again, very quickly the rats would learn to stay in their little bit of the cage, in their half of the cage, and not venture forth into the other. Then they would electrify the third square, and very quickly the rat would basically just stay in one corner of the cage. Now, what was interesting wasn't the rat's common sense reaction to, it hurts when I do this, I'm not going to do this, but even after they turned off the electricity to the rest of the cage, the rat would never venture back into those areas where it had been hurt before. And that's really how it begins to map out into our lives. You know, we've all had post-traumatic stress. We've all had experiences in our life where things just did not work the way we wanted them to, where they went very badly. And the difference between you know, whether we've met those experiences with resilience and we've thrown ourselves back into the arena, or we've shut ourselves down from going for what we want and getting what we want, is this notion of have we learned from our experience, well, there's no point, I may as well not even try to venture forth into those areas anymore? Or can we unlearn that? Have we just simply learned, well, that's what happened then, let's see what happens now? And that opens us up to discovering that, you know, the nature of life has changed, and what was once a problem probably won't be the next time around. We're going to talk more about this. I'm going to take your calls. I'm going to go to the phones in just a minute. If you want to get in, the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free, 866-254-1579, outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300, and we're going to begin with Kim in Round Lake, Illinois. Kim,
hi.
Welcome to the show. Is Round Lake really round?
You know, I think it's too big to measure.
I don't know. We've got a pyramid lake here, and it always disappoints me because it looks nothing like a pyramid. I don't know what they were thinking. What can I do for you today?
Well, my question to you is this. Over the last couple months, my husband and I had a falling out with our neighbor, one of our neighbors. And just seems since then, because we just bought this house a year ago, that a lot of things have been going wrong. I've been trying to stay very positive about the whole situation. It was a kind of a horrible situation. The woman that lives next door to us also has a child that's close in age to my youngest, and mm-hmm. she verbally and physically and mentally attacked my daughter.
Okay.
And lately I've been having these dreams where her and her husband come to my husband and I. They come to us and, you know, give us hugs and say they're sorry and bring us things. And I was talking with a friend of mine who's very intuitive herself, and she said that sometimes people apologize, come to you in your dreams to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how to get over this, because I'm having a lot of it, because I really thought she was a friend, and I guess my question is,
that's where I was going to ask. So, you know, what's the question in all this?
Is it worth approaching again? Is she really a true person, or is she as manipulative as she's come off? Because this is the second time now that we've had issues with her.
Okay, so it's a great question, and I'll just point out that obviously, as I've known this woman for so long, I'm the right person to ask that question of. I'm being kind of facetious about it, because the reality is, there is no way of knowing. And so, if you're trying to figure out in your head, is it worth doing this? You can't get an answer to that question. In other words, or the other way of thinking about it is, you can get 50 different answers to that question.
Okay.
Because now here's, in order to kind of give you more information to make a decision, though, let me talk a little bit about what happens with relationships in general. Generally speaking, we actually, at some point in our relationship with people, and it's often very early on, though sometimes it happens a bit later, we decide how they are based on how they've behaved. And from that moment forward, it's almost impossible for us to see them in any other way than the way we've decided that they are.
Okay.
So we are all everything, right? In any given moment, I bet if we went through, and I'm not going to do it on air, but we could probably find some times where you've been less than really kind to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, and me too. In fact, usually it's people who call into the show. It's, but you know, we've all got experiences of that. But because we know that we're basically good people, mm-hmm. we don't hold that against us. We don't decide, oh, that means I'm a bad person. We just go, God, I was having a really bad day that day, or I got really upset, or I'm really embarrassed, or whatever it is. But when it's someone else who does it, we tend, and I'm not saying you, but just mm-hmm. we human beings, tend to then start to define the person that way. Oh, they're mean, they're dangerous, they're a bad person.
Okay.
So what that does, what that's intended to do, is protect us.
Mm-hmm.
But what that actually does is it stops us from actually being in relationship with the real person anymore.
Uh-huh.
Because we're locked in relationship with the version of them we hold in our head.
Okay.
And the version of them we hold in our head usually hasn't moved on.
Okay.
So in the spirit of unlearning helplessness, mm-hmm. it would seem that the sort of common sense thing to do would be, if you want to rebuild this relationship, to approach her and say, hey, you know, I either, depending on what feels right to you, mm-hmm. to either say, hey, you know what, I'd love us to be friends again. Or to go in and just start being friendly and take it from there.
Okay.
Because here's the thing, okay? Imagine like the rat in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you step on that thing,
right.
if you go across and you talk to your neighbor and she snaps at you and she yells, well, okay, then don't do that.
Well, right.
you'll turn around and go home. If she seems suspicious, well, that's only natural. You're probably a bit tentative, and that would be the natural response,
uh-huh. You
know, initially. But it gives you the option of forging a new relationship. And so it's not even about healing the old relationship. It's about a chance to build a brand new one. Because I'm going to guess you're not exactly the person you were a year ago.
Well, nobody is, yeah.
Exactly, and that includes
her. We all evolve.
Right. Now, you know, look, she may have evolved into somebody that you don't want to spend time with.
Right.
But that's fine. You don't have to.
I guess my question was, how do we get over that? How do we get over that initial feeling of betrayal?
Oh, okay. So you mean internally?
Yeah. I have seemed to been able to do it a little bit easier than my husband. So I guess my question is more for how do I help him to move past it as well?
Well, I what I would say is I'm going to guess that that's not actually really necessary.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is if you really are moved past it,
mm-hmm.
and if you rebuild a relationship with this woman, that's how your husband will.
Okay.
You know, if you try and get him there when you're not quite there yourself, and you, you know, that's sort of a, I mean, we all do it, but it's kind of doomed.
Okay.
You know, I want you to be the way that I'm not quite yet, but I'd like to be.
Right.
Make sense?
Yes, it does.
Fantastic. So, you know, happy exploring. And that's really what, thanks for calling, Kim. You know, that really is what unlearning helplessness about. It's about exploring. It's about trying things that maybe you tried something like it in the past, and even though it didn't work out, you still decide, you know what? I'm going to step forward, and I'm going to go explore. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
A pleasure.
Thanks. My exploration is wanting to realize what the purpose of my feeling angry when I look back at memories which are unintentional or intentional mistakes that I feel that I've made. Basically, when I look back at them, I get frustrated with myself. I want to bring love and forgiveness to the situation, but sometimes it just ruminate a word? I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ruminate over it, and I dwell on it, and these past few days have been kind of rough, and I was listening to some of the Hay House authors, and it really just brought to my attention, you know, I don't want to feel like this, but I guess maybe I worked through it and identified it, but I just don't see what the purpose of going through these things then. Is it for growth or I don't know. I just wanted to.
So, okay. All right. So let me see if I understand this well enough to give you something useful. What it sounds like is that what you've, you know, what you do is you run through, these like, memory videos in your head,
right.
Of things that you've done in the past. And you feel bad when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So another way of, you know, that we could illustrate that is you spend time hitting yourself in the head with a baseball bat and it hurts and you're wondering why you're still doing it.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, fair enough. And look, there's going to be two reasons that you're still doing it.
And this is what I've learned to do over the thing because of, being in the world and the way that I've been doing this to myself for a long time. And I guess tough habit or old habits are hard to break, you know?
Yeah. So. See, I don't know. I know why people say old habits are hard to break, but actually they're not. What makes an old habit hard to break is if you still see things the way you used to see them on the inside, okay. But you're trying to change the behavior on the outside. If you actually start to see something different, it's not hard to change the habit. In other words, when you actually get, you know, if you were literally hitting yourself in the head with a baseball bat,
it would hurt.
Well, not only would it hurt, but you would, once you saw that that's what you were doing, you would just stop. It wouldn't matter if you'd been doing it for 30 years. It wouldn't
yeah.
be hard to stop doing it. You would just stop because you'd realize, wow, this is stupid and it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, and we're going to talk, if you can hang on with me over the break, we'll talk after the break a little bit about what those reasons are. You haven't yet seen that the way that you're doing this is hurting you without helping you. So we're going to talk about that after the break, but I want you to just do something going into the break.
Okay.
So I'm going to just talk you through this in about 45 seconds, and then you can continue to play with it. Could you, just for a moment, let go of trying to figure this all out?
Okay.
Yeah? Just for now. Well, you can go back to figuring it out later.
Okay.
Could you all right. Now, could you let go of disapproving of yourself just a little for whatever it is that you've done or didn't do?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, great. And how about a little bit more?
As I take a deep breath, yes.
All right. And could you let go of disapproving of yourself for that just a little bit more?
Yeah, I think I could, yeah.
Okay. Now, well, here's what I'd like you to do over the break. As best you can, I want you to just give yourself approval for no reason at all, except that it feels good.
Okay.
Okay, and then I want you to hang on the line, and when we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about this whole notion of forgiveness, where it comes from, and what it is.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Dan. So we're going to be back with Dan. We'll be back with more of your calls. If you want to get in, the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free, 866-254-1579. And we will be back with Dan, back with you, and back with more thoughts on having what you want right after this break.
300.
1, 2, 3, hit it!
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking with Dan in Philadelphia about forgiveness. Dan, how was that? What was it like to just spend a few minutes just approving of yourself?
Very nice. I almost feel like there's a slight weight lifted off my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with, I think instead of thinking too much, I instead of questioning things, I want to just be. And even instead of, like, wondering why, maybe just not wondering and just experiencing what's going on right now with you know, feeling good. And I don't know.
I do some of my best coaching off air. No, that's absolutely right. That's a brilliant insight to have. And,
okay.
And with so many of these things, it is as simple as when you kind of slow your mind down enough, because we all get into spins where we just trying to figure something out. We're trying to work it out. We're trying to make this. And when you just create the space to let that go, to kind of find a deeper feeling, you know, a more unconditional feeling, a feeling that's not going to go up and down depending on, you know, what happened today.
Okay.
That just opens up the space for your own wisdom to start speaking to you again.
If you slip,
you're doomed for life. If you slip, you slip, and then you get back up again. And again,
okay.
that's the whole thing of unlearning helplessness. You know, you will probably slip. So what?
Yeah.
So then you get up.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you for your time, Michael. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Okay. And look, that's the whole thing. You know, one of the reasons that we're so tentative about making changes and about going forward is we think that, you know, once we've set out on a course of action, we have to stick with it. And nothing would be further from the truth. In almost every case, if what you're doing isn't working, you can stop and do something else. And knowing that you have the freedom to change your mind in any moment makes it a lot easier to just move forward and try new things. Let's talk to Olivia in Denver, Colorado. Olivia, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, how are you?
I am very well.
Well, you were talking about forgiveness, and the person that's hardest to forgive is yourself.
For a lot of people.
I did so many mistakes lending people money, and now that those people, they don't even answer my phone calls. And God, I've been beating myself. Why did I do that? I don't know.
Well, look, I can tell you why you did that, because it's the same reason that everyone does everything, which is it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't have done it if at the time you had been sitting there and had a deep, deep feeling, oh my God, this is the stupidest thing I could ever do, you probably wouldn't have done it.
No.
But in the moment, it probably felt like this is something nice that I can do. This will help. This will make a difference. This would be good.
Well, one thing I'm blaming myself is that, okay, they were going to give me this. I'm lending this money, and I'm gonna get this much money back because of, you know, they promised me some interest or something on top. Or they came with the idea that, oh, I don't have to pay my rent, or somebody got sick, and, you know, every excuse in the book. And I don't know, I just blended. And now it's very difficult for me to recuperate that money, and I need that money now.
Okay. So there's two things that I'd like to say. Is it Olivia?
It's Aurelia.
Olvia.
Aurelia.
I'm gonna give up right now. Okay, but so here's two things that I just want to sort of offer you to play with, and one is the same thing that we just did with Dan, which is to just recognize that you can run this 1,000 times, and you're not going to get any new information. Larry Crane, who's the creator of a wonderful course called the Abundance Course, you can find it at www.releasetechnique.com. His metaphor that I always really like is if you've got a filing cabinet and it's empty, there's nothing in it. It doesn't matter how many times you look through that filing cabinet, you're still not going to find the file you're looking for. And when we replay old memories again and again and again, going, well, what if, why did I do that? And what if I had done this? And why did I do that? That's like going back through the empty filing cabinet, thinking that this time you're going to find something there. Okay, that's not where the answers are. So the answers are in that stillness, in the quiet, in that space that you naturally drop into when you let go of all that trying to figure it out. And that's where you'll begin to get some insights, maybe insights into why you did what you did, but more usefully, insights into what to do next. And there's a difference between, and this is the thing that I think might be most useful to you, is there's a big difference between trying to get that money back and creating the money that you need. Now, there's a certain amount of money that you need, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the places where you might be able to get that money is from the people you loaned money to. But there are thousands of other places where you could get that money.
Uh-huh.
And if you, instead of thinking, I must get it from here, you open yourself up to all the different places and all the different ways that you can make that money, then what you'll find is it's much easier. Now, what I want to do, because I don't have time to go through all this right now on air, is... are you a member of the Hay House, I think they call it the community that gives you where you can listen to the old shows?
No.
Okay, so what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to hang on the line and give your information to Joe, because I want you to listen to a show I did called the 90-Day Money Challenge. And in that, the 90-Day Money Challenge, because in that show, I go through a whole lot of ways that when you want to create money fast, that you can begin to do it. Okay?
Okay.
All right. And Joe will sort out, or I'll sort out through Joe for you, how you can listen to that show. All right?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Okay. And you know, this is, again, this is the thing, is we get caught up in something that happened in our past, and we replay that thought again and again and again. But the reality is, it's just a thought now. Whatever happened to you in the past is only alive in the present because you keep thinking that thought. It's like you keep watching the same movie. I often use that analogy of being in a movie theater and watching a movie with people. And I point out that when you're in a movie theater, your experience of life is whatever is on the screen. But what's creating that isn't life, it's a projection. And the projector is your own consciousness. That's like the light, and your consciousness doesn't care what you project. It just shines a light of attention and awareness. But what goes in front of that light of attention and awareness is what's projected on the screen, and that's thought. And if you keep putting the same movie on, if you keep running those same thoughts again and again and again, that's going to be your experience. That's going to be what's on the screen. And in any moment, it doesn't matter if you've run that film for 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, in any moment, you can just get up and walk out of that cinema, or you can change the film. And in that moment, everything else will change as well. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Sarah in Columbus, Ohio. Sarah, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, my name is Sarah, and for several years I had a wonderful law practice with my husband, who's now my late husband.
Okay.
at the end of his life, we brought in a third partner who was going to help us out with all the things I'd be busy doing. And he did. I mean, he did some nice things, but instead of being a helper, he just did a lot of bad things and didn't serve the clients. And I spent the last year with some of all the clients that I could help, making them whole and right. And now I'm noticing he's not following up on paying, you know, taxes, doing any of the things he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the point, I'm not litigious.
which is funny in and of itself, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. I do it for others. Yeah. You know, and I'm really struggling because, well, it's just not like me, number one. Number two, I don't want to bring up all the bad things that he did. And possibly proclaiming that I'm just another sucker widow probably isn't my favorite definition of self. So I thought maybe a little input would be helpful.
Okay. I want to say that in my entire life, I've never heard the phrase sucker widow. So I love the fact that you're worried about being another one. I do think I understand. But putting that to one side for a minute, why would suing? And I mean, there may just be information that I'm missing, but could you not just stop working with him?
Oh, I did a year ago.
Okay.
I had to a year ago. It became clear.
Okay, so then why is it still relevant to you and your business if he's not paying taxes and handling clients?
Because I
now
had to pay all the old taxes, and I found liabilities and things that he had done that he hadn't done.
Okay.
And
so if he, let's just say he disappeared off the face of the earth tomorrow.
Oh, lovely thought.
Hey, that's what we try to do here. No, but if he did, you know, how big a bill are you facing? You know, what's the cleanup? If he just was gone tomorrow, what are you left with?
Oh, I'm guessing it's around $80,000.
Okay. And if that was the case, would you find a way to settle that over time?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it definitely is not an easy, pleasing thing to do, but I could accomplish it.
Okay.
I just don't like, you know, I see him in the courthouse repeatedly, and, you know, when I do, I'm reminded that I'm subsidizing his kids' trips to their vacation, and it irritates me.
Okay. So I can see how, if that was the bit of the story that I focused on, that would irritate me. You know, when I think about it that way, because I always try people's problems on. I like to do that. I like to just borrow their problems for a little while, because I don't know, mine are so dull. I've had them for so long, you know. It's always fun having a shiny new problem. But here's the thing. Why would you want to keep focusing on that thought?
Well, I don't want to keep focusing on that thought.
Okay, so which thought would be one, if you could focus on something else that would be wonderful, what would you focus on?
Well, I'm very pleased that I was able to help the clients that he, most of them, that he didn't help. So I'm very pleased about that.
And okay.
I rebuilt my practice because any case he touched, I gave him.
Great. And what about the freedom? That feeling that you kind of just touched there at the thought of him just not being there anymore. That sense of freedom that you can just get on and do things your way, the way that you know, treat people the way that you'd like to treat them.
Well, that is true. I have been doing that, and that is a good thing.
Okay. So it seems to me there's two different things that are behind the question, and I just want to separate them out because sometimes that makes it easier to look at them. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
One is practical. You know, okay, there's some tax liabilities that need to be covered, and in an ideal world, he would cover them, and you can do whatever you know to do to, you know, try and induce him to do that, and one of them might be the threat of legal action or legal action, and, you know, there's, you know, the stages of that, the asking, then the whatever.
Yeah, it's been ignored, and I'm kind of at the, you know,
right.
I must do it if I'm going to do it. And I'm paying the taxes.
Right. So here's the thing. This is such a weird idea, or at least it was to me when I first came across it. But it's perfectly possible to take direct action against somebody without any malice or ill feeling whatsoever. So I'm not saying this is what you should do. I don't know anything like enough about the situation to offer advice. So please understand, that's not what I'm saying here. But if suing was just, didn't have all the stigma and idea of, oh my God, it's a lawsuit and how dare you and all that venom behind it, but it was just a practical next step in the recovery of some money, that's a very different thing than trying to take your revenge or trying to prove that you weren't a sucker or that you can't be walked over.
You're correct.
And what I'm going to suggest is that whatever action you decide to take, even letting it go, if you took that action from the place of, I'm going to prove something and I'm not, they can't do this to me and all that, you're going to have a horrible time no matter how it turns out.
I agree.
And whatever you decide to do, if you do it from a place of, I am doing what I love to do with the people that I'm doing, and I'm doing it in the way that I really believe in, and I'm creating a new life for myself, post my husband, and I'm doing it in the best way that I know how, that regardless of how it turns out, it's going to be fine.
Okay.
Okay.
Accept that. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Sarah.
Take care.
Okay. So, you know, that's just a general principle. When we do things for a reason, because, in order to prove that, there's always an energy that gets in the way of clear thinking and that gets in the way of good feeling. When we take the same actions or different actions or whatever actions we know to take from a place of ease and comfort and well-being, and this is just the next step, the next thing I know to do, however it turns out, and it tends to turn out pretty well, we're going to have a quality of life and a quality of experience that's really what we're all after anyways. We'll be back with more of your calls if you want to get in the last segment. Numbers to call 866-254-1579. If you're on hold, please hang on. I'm going to do everything I can to get you on, and we're going to be right back after this.
One, two, three, hit it!
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about unlearning helplessness and getting what you want in any area of your life. And we're going to go back to the phones and we're going to talk to Chris in Seattle, Washington. Chris, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
My question just seems so small now. But I stress out about money and basically every other problem that I have in my life. And
you're the guy. You're the one. I knew there was somebody on the planet who's stressed about money. I'd been waiting to meet him. Nice to meet you, Chris.
So, from listening to other programs on the station, I kind of try to stop myself as soon as I start stressing out about any problem that I'm dealing with, and try to think of a more positive thought to it, or actually turn around the situation like. For money this morning, I was trying to tell myself I need to think of something positive so that I can feel happier about it, so that I'm not stressing and kind of like focusing more on the stress and all that other stuff. So I was thinking I should like maybe try and think of winning the lottery, and I guess mentally I have the picture in my mind that someone calling me up saying, oh, we won the lottery, or I won the lottery, and that the feeling of But the good feeling wasn't there because, I always focus on problems because they're here.
Okay, Chris, let me ask you something. Are you familiar with the phrase rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic?
Nope.
Okay. Well, if you think about it as a metaphor, that's the problem with thought substitution as a primary strategy for feeling good is... You know, essentially, you're changing one set of reactivity where your feelings are just reacting to your thoughts for a different set of reactivity. And admittedly, it's a more pleasant one. So instead of your well-being being based on thoughts about problems, you're trying to base it on thoughts about cool things. But let me see if I can sort of do an overview for you. Okay, because when most people want to try and be happy, the way that they start to do it is they think, okay, if I get stuff that I want, that will make me happier. And if I have stuff that I don't want, that will make me unhappy. So I'm going to try and get more good stuff. So they try and change their feelings by changing the world. And that most people fairly quickly find out is really, 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 really the hard way and doesn't work. Because even if you get the stuff, you find that the good feelings don't stay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next thing that a lot of people will try is action. They go, oh, okay, it's not what I have, it's what I do. So I'm going to try and do these things because they'll make me happy, and do less of those things because they make me unhappy. And again, it doesn't actually hold up, because when we start to try and do things that way, first off, we find that it's difficult to only do some things and not others. But even when we do, we find sometimes, for completely inexplicably, we're really feel good even though we're doing all the wrong things. And sometimes we're doing all the right things and we're still miserable. So the next place that people go is where it sounds like you're at. Is they go, okay, it's not what I have, it's not what I do, it must be what I think. And if I think happy thoughts, then I'll have a good experience. And if I think unhappy thoughts, I'll have a bad experience. And I'll feel unhappy. And up to a point, there is a truth in that. Again, where it breaks down is that nobody can do it. Okay? It's not that you're just not disciplined enough, or that you just have to practice harder or try harder. That's not the way our brains work. Thoughts come into our brain. Now, we have a lot of choice about which thoughts we invest our energy in and which ones we don't. But I don't know anyone, and that includes the teachers of positive thinking, who can control and only think happy thoughts, unless in those moments where they're just ramming, forcing affirmations 24/7, just continually putting in those thoughts, those thoughts, those thoughts. And the problem is, as soon as they stop, they go right back to how they were before. And in fact, usually there's an internal backlash, and all the negative stuff that they've been blocking out of their brain comes flying up and goes, finally, we have some traction. So the next place that people go, if they've tried that, so they go, okay, it's not what I have, it's not what I do, it's not what I think. Maybe what I need to do is just not think, because thoughts are clearly the problem. So if I just don't think, then I'll be happy. And that's sort of the spiritual path, the meditation, the practice of stilling the mind. And in fact, people do tend to have more good feelings in those moments. But then people get into this whole thing about, geez, I'm not disciplined enough, I forgot to meditate today, I should meditate more often, but I'm just so busy. And again, they find something new to worry about at that level. Okay, so I want to stand this whole thing on its head a little bit. I want you to imagine that instead of it being like a continuum that goes from left to right, from unhappy to happy, and if you go this way, you know, if you do the things to the right, you get more happy feelings. If you do the things to the left, you do the less happy things. I want you to imagine that the line is vertical, and that your natural state is right there at the bottom. It's well-being. In other words, if you've ever hung out with a baby, do you have kids?
No, I have a newborn nephew, but that's...
Okay, did you spend any time with a newborn nephew? Just even like 5 minutes just looking at him?
Yeah.
And did you notice that he didn't need therapy?
Yep.
You know, and that in fact he was kind of just seemed to be really, really in bliss when he wasn't uncomfortable in dealing with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that's us. Okay, that's who we are underneath all the thinking and underneath all the doing and underneath all the having. That's our natural state. And all that can ever happen is we can get caught up in a world of thought, trying to think ourselves this and think ourselves that. And sometimes we'll think more of the positive thoughts and have more positive feeling. And sometimes we'll think more of the negative thoughts and have more negative feelings. But when we just sort of let go of the whole game, what starts to bubble up to the surface is our innate well-being. So one of the things that keeps you worrying is trying to not worry. And I know that's one of those sort of annoying things when somebody says it, because, well, how do I stop not worrying about worrying about not worrying about? But really, it is just a case of seeing it instead of trying to understand it, instead of trying to work it out or figure it out. So what I'm going to encourage you to do, just as a, you know, a thing to play with over the next week, is just start noticing how much work you're doing in your head to try and control your feelings and to try and control your world. And to the best of your ability, when you notice yourself doing that, just smile and let it go, just for now. Just like, I don't know if you were listening at the beginning of the show, just like I asked the guy to do at the beginning of the show.
Yep.
Just let go of trying to work it all out, figure it all out, control it all. And just notice what happens to your experience this week when you stop trying to change it, stop trying to fix it, stop trying to make it different. And I'm gonna tell you that my experience says you're gonna have a really, really, really wonderful week. And if I'm wrong, phone me back and we'll try something else. You up for playing with that?
Yeah, and I think I've kind of run into myself time doing that because I know I overanalyze things and I obsess about things, and then I can catch myself thinking, oh, I'm doing it again, and but at the same time, I guess I'm still caught up in it because I'm saying, yes, I'm obsessing about it, but I'm still gonna go with it.
Right, and I think the key phrase there is catch yourself. Because there's an implication there, maybe not for you, but that you're catching yourself doing something you shouldn't be doing. All that's happening is you're thinking, and you're buying into some of the thoughts and as if they're important. You know, thought is so fleeting. I mean, if you just let the thoughts come in and go, they're so random. I don't know how much time you've spent in your own head, like looking as opposed to participating. But I'm always amazed if I just tune into my brain for, you know, 2 minutes at the amount of random crap that flows through it. But it only starts to really impact your experience and impact your life when you start focusing on parts of it and going, ooh, I can't believe I had that thought. That's a bad thought. I shouldn't have that thought. Ooh, that's an important thought. I better spend some more time with that thought. I better think about that thought.
Yep.
And what starts to happen is like these trains of thoughts just take you anywhere but the present moment. And in doing that, they just take you away from your good feeling.
Yeah.
So, you know, in other words, I guess what I'm really asking you to play with, if you want to, this week, is taking a week off from personal development and growth. I release you, my son.
Oh.
And I can tell from that reaction, that's exactly what you need to do right now. So again, as an experiment, would you be up for it? As a 1 week experiment.
I probably try as much as I might not to freak out about bells and stuff getting turned off and all that, but yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Fantastic. And please do either, you know, you phone back in, let us know how you get on, or you can also go to geniuscatalyst.com and there's a radio show forums and you can check in with us there, and I'll get on there and respond if you post.
Okay.
All right, Chris, thanks for phoning.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Shay in Jersey City, Jersey. Shay, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hey, Michael, excellent to speak with you. Thank you for taking my call.
A pleasure.
I think that last call really, really helped me out. It's sort of part of my problem, sort of looking at what is so, you know, but but not getting too caught up in it.
Okay, well, let's do this, Shay. We've got about 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
So if I could help you with something in 2.5 minutes, what would it be?
Well, I'm a sensitive, creative, musician, freelancer type person.
Okay.
And I need to know how not to get caught up in feelings of helplessness and powerlessness when sort of no one wants what I'm selling, you know, sort of thing. You know,
right.
I'm trying to peddle my music and my skills as a composer, and I just can't get freelance work. I really get into a bad loop in my head, you know, and I need to know what to do about that.
Okay, so the main thing that I'm going to say is there's a big difference between the statement "I haven't yet sold any of my music" and "nobody wants what I have." Okay, one is a statement of fact.
Yes.
And the other is a really depressing story.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what I'm going to really encourage you to do is just stick with the facts this week.
Okay.
And, you know, so those facts might be things like, I'm feeling really low. Nobody has yet bought my music. I have 3 pieces of music that I really am proud of. I can only think of 2 people at the moment that I could talk to about it. Okay, those might be facts.
Yes.
And in that case, what do you think I would suggest you do?
Well, just work with what I got.
Exactly. Talk to those two people.
Yes.
See where that takes you. And it's funny when, you know, one of the easiest ways, you know, we can get into all the fun and the psychology of changing our story and creating a more positive story. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, that's just more noise in our head.
Yeah.
And the easiest thing to do is kind of notice, oh, yeah, I'm telling myself that depressing story again. I'm watching, you know, I'm watching Dr. Zhivago again. Oh, I'm just getting to the depressing bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what was it I was doing? Oh, yeah. I'm selling my music. I'm going to call some people about my music.
Yeah.
And what you'll find is that the more you put your attention on what you want to create and not on what you think you need to change or, you know, fix in your head in order to do it,
yeah,
the easier it is. Life responds remarkably well to direct, clear action. And all the psychology in the world won't make that any easier. But it can make it a lot harder.
Yeah, stay out of the story. I do have a complete story.
Right, and I can tell just from, you know, the couple minutes we spent together, it's not a great story. I mean, you know, it might be a lovely story from the point of view of, like, you know, Reader's Digest, but it's not a kind of a story that's going to make you want to jump out of bed in the morning and go to work.
No, it's horrible. It's a horrible
story. All right.
Well,
so stop listening to it.
Yes.
You know, that's all.
Yes.
All right, Shay, thank you so much for phoning in.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So listen, guys, thank you so much for listening today. Thank you to Steve and Joe in studio for getting the show on air and keeping everything working. Again, if you want to come see me talk about effortless success, I'll be doing a day with Hay House in London at the end of September and a workshop with Hay House in Tampa at the beginning of October. You can find out more information about both of those at www.geniuscatalyst.com. Coaching Mastery is sold out, and I will look forward to speaking with you. I'm going to have Dr. Richard Bandler, the founder of Neurolinguistic Programming, as my guest next week. Bye-bye for now.